Mr. Brenner, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Robert Brenner, attorney for Melinda Brown, plaintiff appellant in this case. This case comes to this Court on a grant of summary judgment on all the plaintiff's claims. Where it, and what the most important we begin is that the Court, the trial court, in this case found that two exhibits were the basis for it should grant judgment. Those two exhibits were an Exhibit 29 and an Exhibit 30. Now, first of all, Exhibit 29 is a letter to which my client states that she did not get. But it is a letter which has, and I point out, has a number of flaws about it. First of all, it was not made by her supervisor or a person in the authority to tell you you're going to be fired. Secondly, that letter, what's important is that letter was never pled in the original pleadings, nor was it pled in the summary judgment motion. But we would point out that what's important to look back at that letter is an exhibit that went before. On 12-13 of 11, which is an exhibit shown at Exhibit 20, page 598, the language in that letter is similar to the language in Exhibit 29. It says that if you have not got a job by this point with Regional West, you will be administratively discharged on January 7, 2012. The letter we're talking about, this Exhibit 29, is made up, dated by type, January 18th. The man says he signed it on January 19th. He also, Vardell, who is just the HR man, says that I think I mailed it around that time. Well, the court said it is undisputed evidence that the plaintiff was informed on or about January 19, 2012, that her employment would terminate August 15th. But what is important is that letter was not an inevitable result which will occur. First of all, the court even pointed out, unless she applied for and secured other employment with the defendant. Well, first of all, the letter, if it says, if you obtain the appropriate clearance to return to work before the end of one full year, August 15th, your application would be considered for any job openings to which you apply. If no job match can be found, when the termination will occur. However, what's important is to look at some of the events that occurred. On March 21st of 2012, an IME, an independent medical exam, secured by the hospital, that doctor said that Melinda Brown can return to gainful employment. So she could return. Then again, the Regional West doctor on May 7, 2012, Dr. Shear, said that Melinda Brown can return to gainful employment.
Did she then apply for anything? When the doctor said you can, did she apply for anything?
Under the rules and the way it was set up, which is I think is important, is the rules under the EEOC guidance says that when she has sought back in December to be accommodated, they didn't do anything. They never denied her accommodation, but they didn't do anything. The EEOC guidances, which is would be controlled by R27-302 evidence rule, says that the employee doesn't have to apply. You go to, it's question number 20 in there. The employee doesn't have to apply. The employer, who's in the best position to say what jobs are available, is supposed to get a hold of and have an interactive process with the employee to find a job. But it's a burden laid upon the employer, not the employee, because I'll apply for everything, but I wouldn't be capable of performing it. The employer's in the best position to say, oh, we think you could do these two or whatever jobs.
So we're talking about an event that triggers a running of time, is that
right.
Correct?
Because
so what do you think is the event that should trigger the running of time?
August 15, 2012, the date she was terminated. There is no doubt she got the letter of August 15th saying, you're terminated, which again was written by Mr. Bardell.
Mr. Brenner, is it your position that she did not receive the letter of January 19th, 2012?
Yes.
I'd like to direct your attention maybe to transcript, page 19. There was an EEOC complaint attached to your first amended complaint. Within that, did it not say that later in 1 of 2012, I received a letter from the respondent indicating that I would be kept on as an employee on extended leave until 8-15 of 2012. That complaint appears to be signed by Ms. Brown. What is your position on those statements?
Okay. In December, when she filed that EEOC complaint, we had gathered some materials to what was going to be going on. And she, at that time, was trying to relate back to the events that, in her mind, she didn't know. But at the same time, Your Honor, I want you to think about it. In December 14th, she gets this letter that comes and tells her that on January 7th, you're not going to have a job. Administratively,
and then she's supposed to reapply for a job thereafter.
And,
is that
and that's what they kept saying.
Did she reapply?
No, she did not, Your Honor, because on December 16th, she served a request for accommodation. And following the EEOC rules and everything that was given, she kept asking for a job. She
December
kept saying,
16th of 2011?
Pardon me?
December 16th of 2011?
Yes. She what said, I want to do any job.
What did she do after January 19th of 2012?
On April 4:30 of 12, I was in touch with Hartford, who is the workers' comp carrier. They said they'd find her a light-duty job. On May 25th, which she didn't even know about, of 2012, it was in a communication between Hartford and Regional West, something we gained in discovery, we learned that they had rejected to come her back. On June 28th, 29th, Melinda contacted Hartford. Then again in July 29th and 30th, she contacted Regional West, Ms. Ewing, and who admits that Melinda kept getting a hold of her, wanting a job.
And did she apply for jobs?
What the question was is what job to apply for, and she kept saying, I'll take any job. I'll take any job. Give me a job.
Were the job postings public?
There are job postings that are public, that are on the website, but they do not correspond to the the essentials of doing the job, if the court understands me. There are certain functional essentials to do a job. The job postings don't give that. That was pointed out in the evidence.
But what's your understanding of applying for a job in this context?
Well, in this context, it seems that what we have to do is say I want to apply for job A that's there, but what the EEOC says, the employee isn't supposed to have to do any of that, and that's what we followed. But in this case, she kept calling them. In fact, Ms. Ewing said, I will try to find you a light job in the end of July. I will try to find you a light job. But Ms. Ewing admits she never got a hold of Melinda. Never got a hold of her. And so in this case, there are material issues of fact and the law that could be applied, because the EEOC guidances would be applied both in proving our claim and in defense to any of their claims.
Let's assume for a minute that she received the January 19th letter. Was that letter accurate?
I believe it's not. It's a letter telling you, if you don't do this and you don't do that, or you can't get this done, which all those were in the control of the defendant, not us. You don't have a job on August 15th.
And isn't that exactly what happened?
It's the same thing that in December when they had that earlier letter, but there was no termination of a job. I will even, assuming His Honor's point that if arguendo, she did get it, she had no reason to expect she'd be fired. I mean, she had been asking for a job. Give me a job. And that's what she kept begging for.
And that was a request for an accommodation.
Yeah, and was that for her request for accommodation?
And she was never granted one, correct?
Nope, never denied it.
And so how do you deal with the authority that says that you can't continually request accommodation to extend a limitations period, because then the limitations period would have no meaning?
When you read them, all those cases said that somewhere they got denied. As I read it, they got denied. We didn't even get the interactive process.
Was she asked to fill out a form?
Yes.
For the accommodation?
She did, and she turned it in December 27th. And she did all everything they asked her. She kept giving them work slips. She kept doing everything. It is our contention that upon their substantive material issues of fact and dispute, the ultimate inference is to be drawn, in this case, that the summary judgment was inappropriate and this court should reverse. We thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Olson, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Steve Olson. I represent Regional West Medical Center. The issue is, what event triggered the statute of limitations? And if you go back, starting in December of 2011, there are many events that took place that would have given a reasonable person an idea that there was a problem. Ricks would tell us that, is there a violation of a legal right? Was there a right to maintain suit? Or was a problem in existence, even though you may not have known the exact nature of the problem or what your damages are? And that's the trigger of the statute of limitations. Her own testimony, she admitted the fact that she was talking to Eric Bardell, and she knew that she didn't have her job to go back to. She knew she didn't have a job. She admitted the fact that she thought she was terminated as of December of 2011. In her mind, she was told to go clean out her desk. Those are all things that would lead a reasonable person to conclude that there was a change in her job status such that she may have some legal rights. She met with Vardell, who is part of the HR department. They met and talked verbally. She received letters back and forth in terms of what was going to happen with her leave and her job. She talked to others in the HR department. They assisted her trying to talk about other jobs. They told her repeatedly, you need to apply for other jobs. Bardell testified that he went over three different jobs that may be appropriate for her. She said, I'm not going to apply for jobs. Bardell even went so far as to go to in the hospital down to a cashier's job to look and observe whether that job would have been appropriate for her, and then reported back to her. He offered to help her build her profile so she could get on the website at the hospital and apply for these other jobs. She was the one who decided not to take the advantage of any of those opportunities. And yet in this litigation, we see that she has admitted that she was furloughed in January of 2012. Your Honor, in the NEOC matters, where she admits that she was furloughed in January 2012. There's an affidavit in evidence in this case, her own affidavit, where she indicates she was told verbally and in writing by Regional West that she was placed on furlough in January 2012. Her deposition testimony, she admits that she was furloughed in January of 2012 and told that she had to apply for jobs, and yet she refused. And of course, Bardell supports the fact that he talked verbally about the furlough and what that was and explained it to her, and he sent that letter.
What in this context, or by reference to other things such as EEOC rules, what does it mean to apply for a job? What is required?
She was told that she needed to go onto the website, find a job, and actually apply for it.
That's how you have to do it. Is that the
true?
Is that the only way, or is that one of the ways you can apply for a job, either under the internal handbook or EEOC guidelines or other reference?
All jobs at Regional West, you'd have to apply on their website. And that's why Bardell said, we'll help you build your profile so you could do just that. And she made it clear to him and to others that she was refusing to do that.
Step letter seems to indicate that there are facts indicating that his client repeatedly contacted the hospital and said, I want a job, I want any job. How do you respond to that?
The difficulty was she was trying to do that and saying, for example, at the end of December of 2011, she sent out a letter and said, as my request for accommodation, I want a job when I'm ready to come back. I don't care what it is. But that's not a request for reasonable accommodation. A request for reasonable accommodation is, look, if I have this job, maybe I need this type of workstation to help me with my conditions that I have. But simply saying that I'm still under treatment, I'm going to get injections in January, and I just want a job, I don't think does anything in terms of requesting an accommodation. And I think under RICS, we'd also find as well that even though back in December and early January, she's being told that her employment is changed, her status is being changed, which would trigger the statute of limitations. You cannot continue that statute of limitations or reinstate it simply by making more and more requests when you know those requests haven't been granted and that the hospital is not going to grant your request for an accommodation. The letter that she refers to, in fact, in her own complaint, she admits in paragraph 24, she suffered an adverse employment action by first furlough. So she's acknowledged in so many different ways that she was told in January that she was going on furlough. That would have told her that the hospital was not going to grant any type of an accommodation or provide her another job. And that stands to reason because she never applied for one. And she admits that. We probably would not be here if she had chosen that advice, chosen, gone onto the website and applied for any type of job. She may have been granted an interview, and this case may have been far different. But her own actions have resulted in the fact that she had to know, and a reasonable person would have known, that she was on furlough and she wasn't going to be granted a job or an accommodation. I think that was the basis for the trial judge's determination that certainly as of January 19, she had to know what her status was. And the status was very clear to her. That furlough was described in the leaves policy that she had access to. And said very clearly, you get three things. You get your FMLA leave that she requested and she got. You get the director's approved leave, which was another 8 weeks that she requested and she got. And then you're on furlough. And the issue we have in this case is she was treated exactly under that leaves policy as every other employee at the hospital. There's no evidence in this record that she was discriminated against or treated differently. That she was given everything that that leaves policy provides. And that's what the notice to her in January said, was you got that policy, it'll end August 15 of 2012, unless you apply for other jobs and get another job. So I don't know what else the hospital or the HR department could have done. And I don't know what other information she could have received that would have told her, hey, you've got problems or your work status has changed such that she would have known her statute of limitations was going to start to run. In fact, after that letter on the 19th of January, nothing took place in terms of a decision by the hospital that would constitute an adverse employment action. Nothing took place until August 15 of 2012 when she received that letter from Bardell saying your employment was over. And Bardell testified that there wasn't another meeting in August of 2012 to make that decision. That decision had been made by the hospital back in January.
Simply as a hypothetical, if you will, if she didn't get the January 19th letter, what would your argument be?
There are so many other issues that were going on that would have told her. Her own admission that she thought she was fired would have been evidence enough that the statute of limitations of 300 days would have started as of December 16 of 2011. That's when she had that meeting with Bardell. And that's when she said, I thought I was terminated. And in fact, then, her impression of that was she was being told to clean out her desk. Those two things would tell you, I've got a problem. Maybe I don't know the exact nature of it, but something's different here. At the same time, she's also told, you don't have a job. It's not there for you. those things would have started to tell somebody. And now you've got several different communications around that same time period that are both in writing and verbal.
With under that hypothetical, forgive me if I'm getting too far afield, would you say that the dispute about whether or not she got the January 19th letter would not be material, given the record?
Not material, but we believe that she got the letter, her own admissions in the complaint, in the NEOC filing, in her affidavit, in her testimony. She all talks about furlough in January of 2012. How would she know that? How would she make those allegations if she hadn't received that letter? There was no testimony that came in any other source other than two ways. Bardell said he talked to her about furlough verbally and also then sent that letter. So we think that the trial court was proper in saying she had notice as of the 19th of January 2012 about the furlough. That would have started the statute of limitations. But even before that, there were so many things that also would have triggered that statute of limitations. And she's not complied with that 300-day statute.
Okay, before you sit down, sorry to ask one more. Before you sit down, you used a term a couple of different times in your argument about her refusing to put an application in. What was the basis for the refusal, and does it matter to our analysis?
I don't know. We don't know the basis, other than the testimony from Bardell was she told him, I'm not going to apply. We don't know why. That's all we can do is say, here, you need to apply. Here are the tools to allow you to apply. Here's the website, all the different jobs that you have access to. We can't do anything else other than that. So it was her decision not to apply. I don't know if that was a legal decision, a strategy decision, whatever. I don't think it's material, because still, at the end of the day, it's a matter of what triggers the statute of limitations, and she's clearly violated that 300-day statute of limitations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next